You are listening to rudolfsteineraudio.com. This is a reading of the Bamford translation, the most recent one, of a book by Rudolf Steiner entitled How to Know Higher Worlds, A Modern Path of Initiation. This is Chapter 9, entitled The Splitting of the Personality in Esoteric Training. Paragraph 1. In sleep, the human soul does not receive any information communicated by the physical senses. Perceptions from the ordinary outer world do not reach it. In fact, when we are asleep, our soul is in a sense outside that part of us, the so-called physical body, that mediates sense perceptions and thinking when we are awake. During this time, the soul is connected only with the subtler, ether and astral bodies, both of which elude physical observation. These subtler bodies do not cease their activity in sleep. The soul lives in a higher world, just as the physical body lives among the things and beings of the physical world, where it is affected by them and works upon them. But the soul's life continues during sleep. Indeed, the soul is particularly active then. However, we can know nothing of our activity in this state until we possess the spiritual organs of perception necessary to observe, at least as well as our ordinary senses observe our physical surroundings in daily life, what goes on around us in sleep and what we ourselves do there. As indicated above, esoteric training consists in the development of such spiritual organs of perception. Paragraph 2. If our sleep life has been transformed by means of esoteric training, along the lines described in the last chapter, then we can follow consciously all that goes on around us in that state. We can, at will, find our way in this new environment as easily as we can in our everyday waking life with our ordinary senses. We must bear in mind, however, that the perception of our ordinary sense-perceptible surroundings already requires a degree of clairvoyance. This was pointed out in the previous chapter. Still, at the beginning of our spiritual development, we perceive things belonging to another world without being able to connect them with our everyday material surroundings. Paragraph 3. These characteristics of sleep and dream life illustrate what is happening all the time in human beings. The soul lives and acts uninterruptedly in the higher worlds. From these worlds, the soul draws the inspirations and impulses by means of which it works unendingly on the physical body. This higher life remains unconscious in most human beings. But as esoteric students, we bring these higher activities into consciousness. Thereby our lives are utterly changed. As long as our souls could not, in quotes, see in the higher sense, they were guided by superior cosmic beings. Now they have outgrown this guidance. Just as the operation that enables blind persons to see can change their lives so that they no longer need to be guided by others, so esoteric training likewise changes our lives. As esoteric students, we outgrow the need to be led. From now on, we must lead ourselves. As soon as this happens, of course, we become liable to errors of which ordinary consciousness can have no inkling. We now act out of the world from which, unknown to us before, higher powers once influenced us. These higher powers are regulated by the universal harmony of the cosmos. On the path of inner training, we move out of this cosmic harmony. We must now do by ourselves what was previously done for us without our help or participation. Paragraph 4. For this reason, esoteric writings often have much to say of the dangers connected with the ascent to higher worlds. These descriptive warnings may easily instill a fear of the higher life in timid souls. Yet it must be said that such dangers exist only if we fail to follow the necessary precautions. As long as we follow fully the advice given by true esoteric training, our ascent to higher worlds will endanger neither life nor limb, even though it will take us through experiences whose power and greatness exceed anything that our wildest sense-bound imagination could conceive of. We encounter terrible powers that threaten life at every turn. We likewise learn to use certain forces and beings imperceptible to our physical senses. The great temptation will be to use these forces for our own selfish, forbidden ends, or to use them incorrectly out of an inadequate knowledge of the higher worlds. Some of these significant experiences, such as the encounter with, quote, the guardian of the threshold, close quote, will be discussed in later chapters. Nevertheless, whether we are aware of them or not, we must realize that forces hostile to life exist. True, their relationship to us is determined by higher powers, but this relationship naturally changes when we consciously enter into the world previously hidden from us. At the same time, however, our own being is enhanced, and our horizon of life experiences is expanded tremendously. Real danger exists, however, only when impatience and arrogance lead us to assume a certain premature autonomy in regard to our experiences in the higher worlds. When we cannot wait for sufficient insight into the supersensible laws to be given to us. Clearly, in this domain, humility and modesty are far less empty words than they are in ordinary life. But if these qualities have become second nature to us in the best sense, then we can be certain that our ascent to a higher life will be without danger to what we call our life and health. Above all, we must avoid any disharmony between our higher experiences and the events and demands of our everyday life. Our work is wholly here on earth. And if we evade our earthly tasks and try to escape into another world, we can rest assured that we will never achieve our goal. Yet what our senses perceive is only a part of this world. The beings who express themselves in the facts of the physical world are spiritual beings and inhabit the spiritual world. We must achieve and be blessed by the Spirit, so that we can introduce its revelations into the sense-perceptible world. In other words, we must transform the earth by implanting in it what we discover of the spiritual realm. Our task is the transformation of the earth. Therein lies the only reason for seeking higher knowledge. The earth, as we know it with our senses, depends on the spiritual world, and this means that we can truly work on the earth only if we share in those worlds where creative forces are concealed. This realization should be our only motivation for wanting to ascend to higher worlds. If we enter esoteric training with this attitude and never deviate from the course it charts for us, we need fear no danger. The prospect of potential dangers on the path of esoteric training should not keep us from following it. It should merely exhort us to work diligently on developing the qualities that every true student of esoteric knowledge should possess. Paragraph 5. after these introductory comments, intended to dispel any fears, we shall now look more closely at some of these so-called, in quotes, dangers. Great changes definitely occur in the subtler, ether, and astral bodies of a person who undertakes esoteric training. These changes are connected with certain evolutionary processes taking place in the three fundamental forces of the soul: willing, feeling, and thinking. Before our training, the relationship between these is determined by higher cosmic laws. Nothing about the way we think, feel, or will is arbitrary. Every idea that becomes conscious is connected by natural laws to a particular feeling or act of will. For instance, when we enter a stuffy room, we open the window, or when we hear our name called, we answer the call. Similarly, a foul smell evokes a feeling of disgust in us. These seemingly simple connections between thinking, feeling, and willing are the foundation upon which, if we survey it, we find that our whole life is built. We even consider the interconnectedness of these powers of thinking, feeling, and willing, based as they are on the laws of human nature, to be a prerequisite for a, in quotes, normal life. We would consider a person who took pleasure in foul odors or refused to answer questions as not normal, as violating the laws of human nature. We expect a good upbringing and appropriate instruction to have results because we assume that we can connect a child's feeling, willing, and thinking in a way that corresponds to human nature. Thus we teach children certain concepts on the assumption that these will later connect with their feelings and will. All such efforts are based on the underlying fact that the midpoints of thinking, feeling, and willing are connected in our finer soul bodies in a definite and lawful manner. This connection in the finer organism of the soul is reflected in the coarser physical body. Here, too, the connection between the organs of will and those of thinking and feeling is determined by laws. This is why a certain thought will regularly evoke a particular feeling or activity of will. In the course of higher development, however, the threads connecting these three basic powers are interrupted, severed. At first, this break occurs only in the subtler soul organism, but later, as we continue our ascent to higher knowledge, the separation also extends into the physical body. In fact, as one develops spiritually, the brain actually separates into three distinct members. Admittedly, this separation is not physically perceptible to the ordinary sense organs and cannot be proven with even the finest physical instruments. Nevertheless, it occurs. Clairvoyants can see that the brain of a person possessing advanced abilities separates into three independently active entities: a thinking brain, a feeling brain, and a willing brain. Paragraph 6. At this point in our spiritual evolution, the organs of thinking, feeling, and willing function separately, quite independently of one another. Their interconnection is thus no longer regulated by their own inherent laws, but by the individual's awakened higher consciousness. Therefore, one of the first changes we notice in ourselves as we advance in esoteric training is that neither ideas and feelings nor feelings and decisions are connected unless we ourselves create the connection between them. No impulse leads us from thought to action unless we ourselves freely create it. Consequently, we can now confront dispassionately events that before our training would have filled us with either burning love or bitter hatred. We can refrain from acting even in the presence of thoughts that would have spurred us automatically to action. Similarly, we can now act solely on the basis of pure will, even though others who have not undergone esoteric training cannot see the slightest reason for engaging in such actions. Thus the great accomplishment bestowed upon us on this path is the attainment of complete mastery over the interaction of our thinking, feeling, and willing. But such complete mastery over our soul forces also means that we have complete and individual responsibility for them. Paragraph 7. Not until we have transformed our being in this way can we enter into a conscious relationship with certain supersensible beings and forces. For our soul forces of thinking, feeling, and willing are related to specific fundamental forces in the universe. For example, the force inherent in our will can affect certain things and beings of the higher world. It can also perceive them. But it can do so only once it has become free from its connection to feeling and thinking in our soul. As soon as this connection is undone, the activity of the will can be directed outward. The same is true of the powers of thinking and feeling. If someone sends a feeling of hatred toward me, a clairvoyant can see this as a delicate cloud of light of a certain hue, and can ward off this hatred, just as we would ward off a physical blow that is aimed at us. Hatred thus becomes a perceptible phenomenon in the supersensible world. But we can see it only when we are able to direct the force inherent in our feeling outward, much as we direct the receptivity of our eyes outward into the sense world. And not only hatred, of course. Other more significant facts of the material world are also perceptible in the higher world. And one can enter into a conscious relation with these by discovering and liberating the basic forces of the soul. Paragraph 8. Unless we follow the instructions of esoteric science closely, such a separation of thinking, feeling, and willing can easily lead us to deviate from the proper human path of development in three ways. Such a deviation occurs when the links connecting the three forces of the soul are destroyed before higher consciousness and its understanding are sufficiently advanced to be able to take the reins and lead the now separated forces in the right way to a free, harmonious working together. The achievement of higher consciousness is necessary, because as a rule, the three forces do not develop equally in every phase of a person's life. In one person, thinking may be more developed than feeling and willing, while in another, feeling or willing may be predominant. As long as the connection between thinking, feeling, and willing remains regulated by the higher laws of the cosmos, however, such developmental discrepancies do not cause any disturbing irregularities in the higher sense. If will predominates in a person, for example, then the cosmic laws ensure that other forces counterbalance it and keep it from becoming excessive. But once we begin esoteric training, then the regulating influence of feeling and thinking on the will ceases, and the will, now no longer held in check, constantly impels us on to tremendous performances of power. If we reach this point before we have mastered higher consciousness and are able to create harmony between our forces, then our will can run rampant. It can overwhelm us, so that our feeling and thinking sink into complete powerlessness, and we become slaves, scourged by our will. As a result, we can become violent in character, rushing from one unbridled action to the next. We can also go astray if our feeling frees itself from the restraint of higher cosmic laws. A person inclined to revere others, for instance, can then become so completely dependent on them that he or she loses the will and ability to think. Instead of higher knowledge, such a person's lot is the most pitiful inner emptiness and impotence. If the natural tendency of our feelings is toward piety and religious exaltation, on the other hand, we can fall into raptures of religious self-gratification. A third evil arises when thinking predominates. This produces a contemplative nature, but one that is closed in upon itself and hostile to life. For a person of such a nature, the world has meaning only in so far as it provides objects to satisfy a boundless desire for wisdom. Thoughts no longer stir such a person to action or feelings. Instead, such people become indifferent and cold, avoiding contact with ordinary things as if they were nauseating, or at least had lost all meaning. Paragraph 9. Thus there are three ways in which we can go astray and deviate from the proper path of esoteric training. We can fall into willful violence, into sentimental luxuriating in feelings, or into a cold, loveless striving after wisdom. Viewed from the outside, by materialistic psychiatry, for instance, people who go astray in these ways do not seem very different, certainly not in degree, from those who are insane, or at least extremely neurotic, in quotes. Naturally, esoteric training should not lead to such a condition. The important thing is to ensure that thinking, feeling, and willing, the three fundamental forces of the soul, have developed harmoniously before they are freed from the connection implanted in them and become subject to the awakened higher consciousness. If any mistake is made in this development, and one of the three basic human forces loses its restraint, then the higher soul's birth into existence will be a miscarriage. When this happens, unrestrained force completely floods our whole personality, and it will be a long time before balance can begin to be restored. Thus, what seems a harmless aspect of our character before we enter esoteric training, such as whether we are predominantly thinking, feeling, or willing types, is so intensified once we become students that it can overpower the universal human element so necessary for life. This only becomes a real danger, however, once we are able to have conscious higher experiences in sleep consciousness as well as in the waking state. As long as our experience of sleep remains at the level of the mere awareness of the intervals in it, our sensory life, regulated by universal cosmic laws, has a compensatory effect on our soul when we are awake, restoring the soul's balance. Hence, it is critically important that our waking life be normal and healthy in all respects. The more fully we can respond to the demands that the outer world places on a healthy, vigorous constitution of body, soul, and spirit, the better. On the other hand, an overly exciting or exhausting daily life can be harmful, because we then add potentially destructive and hindering influences to the great transformations taking place in our inner life. We should deliberately seek out situations for which our strength is adequate and that can bring peace and harmony into our relationship with our surroundings. And we should avoid everything that might disturb this harmony and bring anxiety and turmoil into our lives. Here it is not so much a matter of getting rid of anxiety and turmoil in an outer sense as of taking care that our moods, intentions, and thoughts, as well as our physical health, remain stable and do not constantly fluctuate. All this is not as easy for us after we have begun esoteric training as it was before. The higher experiences that now play into our lives continuously affect our whole existence. If anything is out of order in these higher experiences, then this irregularity lies in wait everywhere and can potentially throw us off at every turn. Therefore, we must do all we can to ensure complete self-mastery. We should never lack presence of mind or fail to survey calmly all situations under our consideration. In fact, any true esoteric schooling itself develops all these qualities in us. In the course of such training, we learn of the dangers and at the same time, and at the right moment, discover all the power we need to eliminate them from the field. The end of chapter 9.